So I will be teaching you a very pleasant course called the Gaussian integration and calculus of variations. So let me briefly tell you what we're going to cover. So during the first two lectures, we're going to cover Gaussian integrals. And during the last two, calculus of variations. For the last two lectures, I will update you about the plan next week. But for the lecture one and lecture two, I have pretty much written everything and planned. So today we're going to talk about the Gaussian integrals in one dimension, then about the Gaussian integrals in many dimensions. Then we will be talking about the averages with the Gaussian weight and Wick's theorem. So I hope that despite the pretty large amount of material, we will be able to cover all these topics. So during the second lecture, we will talk about, that will be on Friday, about the imaginary Gaussian integrals and very nice topic related to the integrals involving Grassmann variables. So, as usual, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask me. Just simply shout, Dennis, I have the question. Or if you want me to slow down, you are very, very welcome to do this. Let me tell you as a preliminary that most likely what I will be writing on the board is pretty much familiar to you. If it is familiar, very good. But I should tell you that Gaussian integration plays exceptionally important role in all field theory courses. And in general, in everything related to field theory. So even if you know this, then it is a good idea to look at the board and to refresh your memory concerning this stuff. There is nothing extraordinary or abstract there. It's just the simple integrals, a simple mathematical analysis, and I don't think that you will encounter many difficulties learning or refreshing in your memory this material. But you should keep in mind that when you do field theory, string theory, or just other related stuff, then people even don't use the word Gaussian integration. Because Gaussian integration is such an implied thing in everything that they simply don't say in the textbooks or papers we have the Gaussian integral and we do the Gaussian integration. They say simply we integrate out something. So when you see the word integrate out, then what is implied? Most likely some kind of the Gaussian integration is implied. So we teach you this material, or better to say present you this material, because of extreme importance of these things for further courses. So let's start with something very, very simple. So it's a good idea to start with something simple rather than something more complicated. So let's start with the Gaussian integrals and 1D. So what is the simplest version of the Gaussian integral? So I will be writing predominantly at this corner because there is a lecture there. So I will not be referring further to what I have written there. So it could be a good idea just to move the board. So Gaussian integrals in one dimension. So what do we mean by a Gaussian integral in one dimension? So we mean this integral. E in power minus ax squared over 2 dx. So sometimes you have division by 2 here, sometimes you don't have, but in any case it will be a Gaussian integral with some constant a that is greater than 0, of course, because otherwise the integral will not converge. So the question is, what is this integral equal to? So to calculate this integral, we use the following trick, and I'm pretty much sure that everyone knows this trick, but it's a good idea to look at this trick once again, because in quite many analytical calculations you may have to apply something similar. So let's look at the integral that is exactly the square of this integral. So we are going to have the integral over dx, then the integral over dy, this is another variable, ax squared, a times x squared plus y squared, divided by 2. And in integration is over dx and dy. So this is, in fact, nothing else than the square of our original integral, right? So what do we see here? We see here the integrals over two variables. So if these two variables form the usual x, y plane, then this is a two-dimensional integral over the whole plane, over the whole plane. And here, what we will do, we will switch to polar coordinates so that there is the point on the plane with arbitrary coordinates x and y. And we write x equal to r times cosine theta, and y is equal to r times sine theta. So if we substitute it here, then we will have the integral over whole plane in polar coordinates. So 0 to infinity. So polar coordinates means that this is r and this is theta. So we have the integral r dr, then the integral over the angle, angular integration from 0 to 2 pi d theta, and here we have the expression e in power minus a times r squared divided by 2. So this will be equal, if we use the change of variable, then after taking the integral over theta, we're going to have 2 pi then integral from 0 to infinity times dt over 2 a in power minus a t divided by 2. And this will be equal to, this is a trivial integral, it's equal to 1 over a. So overall, we get 2 pi divided by a. So from all this, it follows that our integral I is equal to the square root of 2 pi divided by a. I decided to spend some time to show you how this works, because this sometimes it may be simply helpful, instead of the original integral, to calculate somehow the integral that ensues from taking some power of the original integral. So you will see probably a similar trick when you consider, or probably not consider, I don't know, transformations related to gamma functions. So this is essentially the basic formula of the whole Gaussian integration. So is it? It's a fractal. So let me move this board up and the middle one down a little bit. Up and the middle one a little bit down. So armed with this result, let's calculate a more complicated integral. So if this was an integral A, I forgot to put the letter A, but anyway. So this is another integral that is more complicated. Let's call it A, and a function of two constant parameters, A and B. The integral will be from minus infinity to infinity, power ax squared divided by 2 plus bx dx. So here, under exponent, we have a second degree polynomial. We could And of course, some constant C, but I decided not to do this because a constant prefactor pulls out trivially. So how to calculate this? Of course, the simplest way is to rewrite what stands here. So if we rewrite this as minus integral from minus infinity to infinity from e in power q of x. So where q of x is what stands under exponent minus a x squared divided by 2 plus bx. Right? Here we have quite a simple function, but there is a general method called the steepest descent method that is used to calculate, at least, if not exactly, then at least asymptotically in some approximations, similar integral, even if q of x is arbitrary. So we must look at the minimum of this function q of x. At the minimum, and it is important that this minimum exists and is well defined. So we look at a minimum of q of x. So to find the minimum, we must take the first derivative. So q prime of x equal to minus ax plus b. So x equal to, I will say, x bar. So x bar is the point of the minimum of this very function, q of x. So q prime must be equal to 0 when x is equal to x bar. Hence, we have that x bar is really equal to b divided by a. Right? So, and from this, it is easy to calculate that q of x is equal to minus a over 2, x minus x bar squared, plus b squared divided by 2a. The inconvenience with those boards is that when I write too energetically, this board shakes. So, so we have rewritten to use a function of x in this form. Well, so when we have the quadratic function, we could have done this exercise without resorting to the whole concept of a minimum. So this is just another way to write q of x using some algebraic manipulation. So that there is nothing particular there. But once we rewrite this, let me continue here at this line. So when we plug this q of x written here, we are going to have, this is a constant, so we can write it here as e in power b squared divided by 2a, and integral from minus infinity to infinity of dx, e in power minus a over 2, x minus x bar squared.
I know how to get this b squared over 2a from completing the square, yeah. But how did you get the over 2 and this finding the minimum?
So you're asking about why do you have 2 here? Everything should be fine because you have here a over 2. A over 2, so if you take x bar squared, then you are going to have, so x bar squared equal to this, so squared divided by...
So if you complete the square, I see it, but yeah. I mean, so you were trying to minimize it,
yeah.
And then plug the minimum to q of x, right?
Right.
But then wouldn't that give you b squared over a rather than b squared over 2a?
No, because here minus sign, here plus sign. It's very important because when we later see more complicated example, it's a good thing to keep in mind where in the integrals or prefactors we have minus and where we have plus. So everything is fine. So here minus, here plus, and here plus. So this is the same integral only that we have above, because we can just make a trivial shift of a variable, and again, the square root of 2 pi over 8 times e e over b squared divided by 2a. Here we must have b squared with the plus sign. The whole exponent comes with the plus sign, and this is very important. So we have obtained one more result that will be useful to us. So that's pretty much it with one-dimensional Gaussian integration, and I'm quite happy that we managed to go reasonably quickly with that. So what we're going to do now, let me move this up and this to move up this as well. Okay, good. Very good.
What if you got a as the imaginary number?
I will talk during the next lecture. Very good. Very good. Let me point out at the following. It is really important that at this stage, A is positive, real number. So to emphasize, let me write. A is real and positive. Here. Otherwise, it can be imaginary, but the real part of this imaginary A must be greater than zero. I hope, but we will consider probably during the next lecture, especially the case in which A is purely imaginary. Very good. So. Let's move further and go to multidimensional Gaussian integrals. We will be concerned here with the following thing. I, as a function not of A and B, but as a function of some elements that constitute matrix A, and another set of elements that constitute vector B, equal to integral from between I equal to 1 and n, so the product of dxi, so this is the measure of integration. That's why the integral is called multidimensional, because the integration occurs over many variables. Exponent minus 1/2 sum I comma j from 1 to n xi ai j x j plus sum I between 1 and n bi xi. So this is the real object that essentially is used in quantum field theory. X is typically interpreted, all variables x are interpreted as the sort of coordinates, and we do the integration over all xi. So we must evaluate this integral. So matrix A. Matrix A. A is considered symmetric. Symmetric and real. At this point, we consider it real. Symmetric and real with eigenvalues. With eigenvalues, lambda I greater than zero. So essentially, this is the positively definite matrix. This is how we view it. And B is just some set of variables that can be viewed as a vector in n dimensions. So the fact that the eigenvalues lambda I are greater than zero is extremely, extremely important for us. Extremely important, because this ensures the convergence of all our integrals. So how to proceed. So before we proceed to get the flavor of what's going on here, we first assume that A is diagonal. In this case, though, those eigenvalues lambda I will be the elements on the diagonal of our matrix. So if A has this form, so lambda 1 and so forth, lambda n, 0, then what we have? We have the integral A as a function, I as a function of A and B, equal to this product, so integral from all product of dxi times exponent. Here I will write sum from 1 to n, ai xi squared divided by 2 plus bi xi. Right. So we see that this exponent factorizes because we essentially have the product of exponents. So we can write this as the product of from 1 to f of individual exponents.
By ai, do you mean lambda?
Lambda. Thank you very much. And of course, with the minus sign here. So no. So minus sign here. Yeah. Minus sign here. Thank you very much. But plus sign here. So minus lambda I x I squared divided by 2 plus bi x I. So sorry for all this. And because we have the sum of individual functions of each variable xi, we can factorize this exponent saying that this is a product of the following exponents, minus lambda I xi squared divided by 2 plus bi xi. Very, very good. So looking at what we have above, we can write down straightforwardly the answer that this is the product of I, the product of from I equal to 1 to n of those things. So 2 pi divided by lambda I square root of this times e in power bi squared divided by 2 lambda I. So instead of a, we just have lambda i's. B I squared divided by 2 lambda i's. Right? Is it clear how we obtained this? Any questions at this point? Why we could do this? So, since we have n variables, we can do the following. So we have n factors square root of 2 pi, so we have 2 pi n power n over 2. Over 2 times the product of these exponents, e equal to 1 n e n power bi squared divided by 2 lambda I. And here, what is the product of all eigenvalues of the diagonal matrix? What will it be?
Determinant.
Determinant. So at this point, we already read that this is the determinant of the matrix A. So, and we shouldn't forget the square root. So we have 2 pi in power n over 2 divided by determinant of A. So determinant of A and the square root of this, so divided by the square root of determinant. So this is our, let me better check, our another key result. Another key result. And let me ask you here at this point if you have any questions. Okay. So, since you don't have questions, let me keep everything here and try to go to this board and continue. So the natural question that arises, how can we generalize this result? The natural question will be, what if A is not diagonal? What are we going to do in this case? A, we have that A is symmetric and real, but it does need to be diagonal. So what to do in this case? In this case, we should probably look at some ways how to diagonalize what stands as an integral, right? Right, and let's do exactly this. We will keep assuming that all lambda I are positive. So we have a real symmetric matrix, so that there must exist some linear transformation that diagonalizes this matrix. So once this matrix is diagonalized, then all eigenvalues, the real eigenvalues of this matrix, and we will a priori assume that they are positive. So if this is integral C, then case D, so A is not diagonal, but can be made that. And there exists some kind of matrix. Say, so there exists some kind of matrix or that is orthogonal . So in NS class you saw what orthogonal matrix means, right? Probably orthogonal unitary matrix. Did Anna tell you about that? Well, in case you don't know.
We had unitary matrices.
Huh?
We had unitary.
You had unitary matrices. Orthogonal matrices has some kind of subclass of unitary matrices. So okay, orthogonal. Okay, let's keep it orthogonal. Orthogonal means that the transpose matrix times the original is equal to the unity matrix. So that is orthogonal such that we have the following property. If we take orthogonal matrix, then transpose it, then multiply by A, and then multiply by original matrix, and T, look at the elements of those matrix IJ that can be written in this form, OIK, KL, LJ. So, and these are equal to the eigenvalues, lambda I, delta IJ. So let me make one more important point, I should have made it earlier. It is convenient to use the so-called Einstein summation. So I believe in the Anna's course you were told what it is, right? So from now on, we will be using the Einstein summation rule. Yes.
But shouldn't this be a matrix? I mean, when you're summing it.
These are the elements of the matrix. This is just my notations. I take the product of three matrices, of three quadratic n by n matrices, and I get the,
when you have lambda I, delta I, this is summation, right? So this will be lambda.
Good point. Good point. Good point because very, very good. Yeah. Let me write this very, very good because there are some things that are quite confusing. Yes.
Yeah, I think the indices on the first O should be in the opposite order. Be
okay, KI. Absolutely true. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Let me write it. Yeah, absolutely true. So let me write this way: lambda I, if I equal to J, and zero otherwise. Einstein, summation rule. Very, very good. Yeah, very, very good. What I have said. I have just said that matrix A can be diagonalized by some orthogonal matrix. So this is just a statement that we have given matrix A. So what we will do next? We will proceed as we proceeded before. So if we consider some function Q as a function of all variables x1, xn, let for simplicity denote it as a function of x, the point in the vector space. That is equal to minus 1 half xi aij xj plus bi xi. Here everything is fine with Einstein summations. I omit the sum here and the sum here. Then if we look at the minimum of this function, and since it's a function of many variables, we must examine the sentence, the derivatives with respect to each variable. So d over dxi q is a function of x. So equal to d over dxi minus 1 half x. Let's write it this way, xkl plus bkxk. So So writing this formula, I simply change the indices to avoid any confusion. So doing such types of calculations, let me tell you down the road, we must be very, very accurate with indices. The indices over which the summation occurs are called dummy indices. So, and this index is not a dummy index, it's a dangling index, because we're not summing over I. It's a single index, it stands alone, so summation is not implied. So it's very important not to confuse going from formula to formula in the process of calculation to dummy indices and not dummy indices. So people who do relativity, for example, David, I'm sure knows what I mean. So, and this must be equal to zero. Now, how should we calculate the derivative from such a form? And one more, I decided to go slowly here, just so that you could understand what you should keep in mind. Here we have xk and xl. So we must differentiate with respect to each of these variables using that dx, say k, over dxy equal to delta ky and dxl over dxy equal to delta ly. So when we take into account this, we will understand that as a result of differentiation, this one half effectively disappears. So this just means that we have here minus ik, xk, the summation over k, plus bi equal to zero. Is this clear why we have exactly this? So this is in fact the vector equation. I is the index that enumerates the number of equations. It runs from 1 to n. So we managed to write n linear equations in one form. So, and this gives us the minimum. So xk equal to, say, xk, bar. So for values of xk equal to xk bar, we have these equations satisfied. So how to solve this? Those equations. Those equations can be solved by multiplying. Oh, let me take the chalk of another color. Yeah, I will write it here and go further. So how to solve this equation? We multiply both sides from the left by inverse matrix A minus 1. But by the components of inverse matrix. So we, of course, assume that the inverse matrix exists, that the determinant is not equal to zero. So as a result of solution, we have that x bar k are equal to a minus 1 ij b, no, so sorry, k j b J. Would you like me to show how, to show the manipulations that lead to this equation, or you everything is clear for you?
Then,
just go ahead.
I think here, if you use the matrix form, the whole expression will be more complex.
The full expression what?
It's a bit more compact, not so complex. And it's much easier to see the structure here. And there's no need to obtain the minimum first. Because with the linear term in the exponential, is that equivalent to do a translation?
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. Absolutely, it's absolutely. But I don't see that this method is more illustrative for pedagogical purposes at that point, just from my point of view. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yes, absolutely. So good. So based on what absolutely Alice has said, we can do the following. We can, after finding this minima, make a shift of variables by introducing them. Let me take. So after that, we just do the following. We introduce the variable yi that is shifted around the found minima. And substituting after that we introduce this and substitute into minus 1/2 xi ai j x j plus bi xi. And what we are going to have. So because of the shortage of time, I will skip the algebra. So it's a good exercise. Check. To do the algebra and obtain that you're going to have minus 1 yi aij yj plus 1/2 bi a minus 1 ij bj. So here we have minus sign. Here we have plus sign. And again with 1/2. Yes, it's a good exercise, a very simple exercise to check that the shift leads to this very expression. So let me move the framework very, very up. So the middle board down. And allow myself to take a break erasing this. So we have the integral I after this substitution I a b equal to. So this exponent so this constant term in exponent is before integral exponent 1/2 bi a minus 1 ij dj. And here we have the integral over all variables of yi from from this quadratic form, minus 1 half yi, aij, yj. So here we have plus sign. Now, how to this integral is simpler, but aij is still not the diagonal, so we cannot very simply reduce to what we have here. And here we recall at this point that there is something that allows us to diagonalize this matrix and hence to diagonalize this quadratic form. So if we make the following change of variables, make the change of variables. Yi equal to, so we take the orthogonal matrix ij times yj tilde. So we basically apply the linear transformation, with respect to our variable of integration y. So if we do this, then we have the following thing. The change of variables, hence, minus 1 half yij equal to minus 1 half. And here we write yk tilde o ky aij o jl yl tilde. And since this is, as we saw before, gives us the diagonal elements lambda, we have minus 1 half y k tilde lambda k delta k l y l tilde. And this is, and here I will restore the sum. I from 1 to n in the sum lambda I yi tilde squared. So we, by this transformation, we reduce the exponent, what stands, this quadratic form under exponent, to the diagonal form, so that we could apply this formula. There is one more subtle thing, though. What about the transformation affecting this product? And here we have to recall that our matrix O is orthogonal. So I will skip the explanation of this because the time is running out quickly. So, and leave you as an exercise to check that the product of original dyi is equal to the product of the transformed yi transformed by virtue of this orthogonal transformation. So it's some kind of an exercise that you should understand how to deal with. So once these things are settled, we can straightforwardly write down the results. Let me write it here. So after that, we have that our AB is equal to pi 2 pi in power n over 2 divided by the square root of determinant of our non-diagonal matrix times the exponent 1 half BI AIJ from inverse of inverse of the matrix A, B, J. So, and this is our major result for the Gaussian integrals involving many variables. Before I ask you if you have any questions, let me emphasize two things. So, the determinant of the original matrix in the denominator. And here under exponents, you have the elements of inverse matrix. So strictly speaking, if you know the original matrix A, then you are supposed to know the elements of inverse matrix A. So to obtain, so if you deal with such integrals in practice, then you have to calculate all the elements of inverse matrix. There is no other choice left. This is just an additional complication. A good thing that to calculate this integral, we don't have to calculate the form of orthogonal matrix that diagonalizes original matrix. So any questions at this point? And I will spend the last 15 minutes talking about just the Gaussian averages. Better to say averages over Gaussian weight. So, okay, if there are no questions, then I will move towards. Okay. I believe this is fine. This is fine. So, why did we obtain those formulas with arbitrary bits? So, what is it useful for? Of course, if b is equal to zero, then that's very good. And it is useful when we calculate the so-called averages with a Gaussian weight. So basically, the general averages look like this. So x, so under the sign of integrals, we insert the products of arbitrary numbers of x variables. Xk1, xk2, and so forth. Xkm and exponent minus 1 half xi ij xj. And because we're talking about the averages, we have here on front the normalization factor where m in power minus 1, the inverse n, is equal to I A zero. Basically, this integral in which B is set equal to zero. So this is what we mean by the averages with the Gaussian weight in the most general form. You may ask a question where you could see such integrals. So I can tell you that you could see such integrals in classical statistical mechanics. When you say consider the interacting particles, that move with arbitrary velocities and occupy some positions in space. In this case, if kinetic energy of each particle, of a classical particle, is proportional to the square of velocity, then you may pose a question: what is the correlation in velocity components for different particles? So in classical statistical mechanics, you have to use the so-called Maxwell distribution. So this is a way you could see such things before if you did not see them in quantum field theory. But this is the general form that we need to know how to calculate. So what comes to our help here is the form of this integral. You see in the integrand here, KM, in the integrand we have the product of two, three, four, or many coordinates. So we can obtain this product by appealing to the integral, that stands here, and differentiating with respect to the vectors, to the parameters bi, the necessary number of times. So to get xak1, we differentiate with respect to bk1 this product, the exponent that contains the sum of bi xi, and then set b equal to zero. We first differentiate this thing, this guy, and after taking the derivative, set b equal to zero. So in other words, we can write let me write it here. So sorry for a little bit poor space management toward the end of the lecture. So we can write that this is equal to n power n times many derivatives, bk1 and so forth, bkm, of our integral eab, under the condition that after taking the derivative, vector b is set equal to zero. So the best way to see this is simply to look carefully what happens when you take the derivative of exponent containing the linear combination of bi xi. Reasonable enough, right? Okay, and because I just don't have much time, let me just tell you what happens when we have the average of just two Gaussian variables, just two, and it will be a good exercise for you to establish what will happen if you have, say, the product of more than two Gaussian variables. Or I can continue during the next lecture. So if we have the average of xk, xl, then we have the following. d over d b k, d over d b l exponent. One second. So n be equal to zero. No, here there is no normalization factor. Here there is normalization. The normalization factor. But here we are not supposed to have one. Of course. D over bk bl exponent from exponent 1 half bi a the inverse matrix elements a minus 1 ij bj.
Danny?
Yes?
Could you explain why you erased that?
One second.
The normalization factor should be there, but it cancels with the determinant and 2 pi to the n over 2 from the I, A, B.
Yes. So,
there should be n,
just,
but...
just one more thing. So, when we have the product of derivatives to get those, actually no. You're right. We must keep it here. In my notes, I have some kind of confusion. Yes, of course. Because when we substitute a I a b, then this prefactor 2 pi. It's cancelled by this. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So here, what we should do? We first should take this derivative, and then set b equal to 0 after taking derivative. Derivatives. So after taking derivatives, not before. First take all the derivatives, and then at the very end set b equal to 0. So let's look carefully what happens when we take the derivative with respect to bl. So when we take this derivative, then, say we fix one of the indices, say here I is equal to L, then what we will get, d over dbk, so from very large bracket. So here we have again the product. We first assume that index I is equal to index L, and this will give us this prefactor. Then we will assume that index J is equal to index L. And we also have one more such a prefactor. So this will lead to cancellation of 1 half. First, assume that I equal to L, obtain 1 half A minus 1 L J B J, and then assume that J is equal to L, and get the same. So we have D over DBK, A minus 1 L, put it this way, LM BM, exponent, bi, and just the last formula, minus 1 I j bj, large bracket, and b equal to 0 after taking derivatives. So what else? So if we take the derivative with respect to bk, then we must differentiate these two terms, this thing and exponent. But when we differentiate exponent once again, this will generate one more prefactor of bk. And after setting b equal to 0, this contribution will turn into 0. So the only way not to have non-zero result is to eliminate this bm. And this can happen only when k is equal to m. So after that, once bm is eliminated there by this derivative, setting b equal to 0, eliminate the exponent, and we have a minus 1 minus 1 k m. So m must be equal to k, a minus 1 k, k if k equal to m, let me write this to
n, LKL.
0 k l, sorry, l, if k equal here, l, and 0 otherwise. Yeah, so the rule is, well, one last sentence, the rule is that each differentiating of exponent will generate the prefactor that must be eliminated by the subsequent derivative. So this means that taking the averages with the Gaussian weight, we must have even number of x's.
Excuse me?
Yeah?
Shouldn't be LK and not necessarily k equal to L.
Of course. So m must be equal to k. So we have k l.
Is a inverse also?
Inverse, yes.
But is a
we take the inverse matrix and take the element k.
Yeah, but is inverse symmetric or not?
Symmetric, yes. It is, yes. Yes. So we assume that the original matrix A was real and symmetric. So inverse must be symmetric as well. Okay, just any questions and we will go for lunch.
Yeah. Dennis, do you also need to analyze the Gaussian integrals over Grassmann space.
I will think.
Including the topology.
So I have a lot of material, but I managed to present only there slightly more than to further that. So I will think what to present next time. Carefully. I believe still that already at this point you need to know about the Higgs theorem. And then we'll see what.